Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about a supplement that you may not have heard of. It's a little bit on the periphery of the solar system of supplements. It's not Venus or Mars. Maybe it's more like Neptune or Pluto. It's out there because it's, I don't know, perhaps other supplements have occupied this category of cognitive enhancement and have made it a little less well recognized. But it's a useful supplement. It's Bacopa monieri. It's an ingredient in a product called Keen Mind. Why Keen Mind? Because when you get Bacopa, sometimes you're not sure of the source, and Keen Mind is a standardized form of Bacopa. Our guest, Dr. Stephen Olmsted, who is Chief Science Officer for ProThera, a manufacturer of really excellent supplements for nutritionally oriented practitioners like myself, and they make a great, very clean probiotic products. Dr. Olmsted, I have in front of me what's called a meta-analysis of the cognitive effects of Bacopa. And what they say is that there are a lot of studies, and what the studies seem to indicate is, and they actually have some problems with some of the studies because the studies didn't involve the standard properly standardized extracts. But they say that the suggestion is that the time taken to complete a task was decreased in subjects taking Bacopa compared with placebo. And in addition, they say that there was decreased choice reaction time, which is, I guess, a psychological term when people are trying to perform a task. There was also increased attention. And one of the reviewers says that, quote, because attention was improved, the extract might be an appropriate treatment for young patients having attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. So that is cool. And as you stated, there is probably research ongoing to further explore the effects of Bacopa. Do you know of any studies that are currently underway?
I should be more up on this, but there are studies currently underway. Consto in Australia has done a lot of work in this area, and he is involved with a couple of ongoing studies. I should know about them, but I'm not quite up on them. So he's at Swinburne University there in Melbourne. And he published a nice review. He published a nice review of 10 years of work on the Keen Mind extract.
So let's sum up some of the applications of this, because we might be concerned with kids, and this is okay for kids to take, kids who might be suffering from ADD or ADHD, or just for maybe students trying to improve their performance on exams, maybe in high school or college. So for general purpose, for middle-aged individuals who have enormous pressures, job demands, they have to multitask, and sometimes they can't get things straight, or perhaps they're retraining in this very competitive job market, competing with some millennials. They want to stay on top of things. That's a good potential application for this. And what about in elderly patients who may be suffering from memory loss, age-related memory impairment, or ARMI?
Right. So, or another term would be the age-associated diminished cognition without dementia, which in one study affected like 45% of people between the ages of 65 and 84. So
it's going to decline. I mean, regardless of whether you have Alzheimer's, Alzheimer's is a very special case. But hey, memory declines.
Memory declines, absolutely. And so there is excellent evidence that Bacopa is going to these were done in subjects who were 55 years or older, and it clearly improves the Wexler memory scale. In this one particular study, they used the Hindu version of the Wexler memory scale, and it improves scores on that.
I would do very poorly on the Hindu version of the Wechsler meter. I don't think I would score very high on that.
So there's like digits forward and digits backwards, right, and visual reproduction and all that kind of stuff. So it's good for that. And it's good for a couple of things that are kind of, you know, there are studies, for example, Bacopa Monieri's been shown to improve the quality and quantity of sleep in postmenopausal women. Mm. And that's, you know, that's a big problem, certainly, and probably, you know, sleep difficulties aren't going to help your memory.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, I have a cup of coffee because it makes me more alert during exams. This seems to be a brain stimulant of some kind, but it actually doesn't interfere with sleep. In fact, it may enhance sleep and promote relaxation rather than set your teeth on edge. So that is a good attribute.
It's a good thing. I mean, this isn't, you know, an amphetamine or amphetamine-like, you know, it's not a stimulant. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good thing, especially, I would think, in taking care of children with ADHD.
Indeed.
The effects of these different components are complex. And I'm not sure that we have it have it sorted out. But one of the things that we know that Bacopa does do is it increases 5-hydroxytryptamine levels in the hypothalamus, mm-hmm, and cerebral cortex. And
well, this is actually an interesting property of herbs, because when you use a drug for Alzheimer's disease, you know, for which, by the way, the drugs are pretty much dismal failures.
Right,
they work for a while, but they don't ultimately have a lasting effect, and many of them have side effects. But they're working on one single chemical pathway. There's sort of a laser-like focus, precision medicine working on one thing. So when you use an herb, sometimes it's even hard to figure out why the herb works, because traditionally it seems to work. And then you find out, well, it's an antioxidant, it's neuroprotective, it seems to work on neurotransmitters, it has a calmative effect, and, you know, all these different things. And it, because there are multiple constituents in herbs that have a multiplicity of effects, that's the way herbal medicine works.
Yeah, that's the way herbal medicine works, and it's uncommon to be able to reduce things to just one constituent, although that's certainly what we in the medical profession have liked to do over the decades. But it's just more complex than that. But one of the interesting things that Bacopa does is it affects what's called synaptic plasticity, and so synapses are, of course, these areas where neurons communicate with each other, and this communication involves ion channels and neurotransmitters, and the neurotransmitters are synthesized and put into vesicles and launched out into this synaptic cleft space, and then they got to hit these receptors, and so building all of these connections is one of the things that Bacopa appears to enhance. And it's been shown in animal models that the Bacopa extract increases synaptic protein synthesis, which is associated with solidifying long-term memories. And it does this by increasing cyclic adenosine monophosphate levels. And it regulates, you know, phosphorylation, mm-hmm, to favor transcription of these cyclic AMP response element binding protein signaling pathways. So it's actually involved with physically building synaptic relationships, which is fascinating.
Hmm. Good stuff. Okay, so there's a scientific basis for this. So there's an experimental basis for this. There's certainly a traditional use of this for memory, and it's worth checking out. Keen Mind is the name of the product, by ProThera, and we've got it at drhoffman.com, or you can call the Hoffman Center. Is there a website for this?
The ProThera website, and that's ProThera, ProThera.com.
Or you can Google Bacopa.
Or you can Google Keen Mind.
Great. All right, so I actually want to switch gears, and I'm glad we have a little extra time, because I have known you for well, I hate to say it, I've known you for, what, about 25 years, perhaps?
Yeah. Yes.
And how we originally got acquainted was through our association as part of ACAM, the American College for Advancement in Medicine. And you, at the time, were one of the foremost experts on the subject of chelation therapy. But I didn't mention in our introduction that you are a board-certified cardiologist, and you practiced cardiology for many years.
Right.
I think at this point you're not seeing patients in cardiology,
no.
But you were one of the perhaps the first cardiologist who recognized the clinical value of chelation therapy. Now, cardiologists mostly, you know, it's like the cross to the vampire when you mention chelation to a cardiologist. They say it's quackery and so on. And you not only acknowledged its efficacy, you became an expert on the science of chelation, on the underlying basis of how it might work. You wrote a book on chelation. Actually, it was a textbook on chelation, correct? It was a rather voluminous discussion of chelation.
Book, right.
Right. And so the question I will put to you now is, how do you feel, you know, nearly quarter century later, with the advent of the TAC study, something we've discussed extensively here on Intelligent Medicine? We've had Dr. Tony Lamas on the Intelligent Medicine podcast several times to discuss the results of a study, which a big National Institutes of Health study, which vindicates chelation therapy. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I guess to sum it up is I told you so.
There you go.
Is how I feel. It was because as you recall, this came out of some early discussions that I had with colleagues at the University of Washington and people at the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at the NIH, and we were working to get some sort of a clinical trial of chelation done, and ultimately Dr. Lamas ended up doing that, and that's just fantastic, and I know that he worked very, very hard looking at multiple endpoints in people who had sustained a myocardial infarction. And I want to emphasize that the patients who received placebo were patients who were intensively treated. I mean, all the patients were intensively treated with everything that modern cardiology has to offer in terms of optimizing outcomes after a myocardial infarction.
And why is that important? Why is that important? Because
the reason that that's important is that adding chelation on top of that, on top of statins, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth, that further decreased the incidence of cardiovascular events in these people, and that's a tough thing to do because where you're already treating them aggressively and you're getting the number of recurrent MIs and the number of revascularizations and the sudden death and so on and so forth, you're getting those down as low as you can get them with modern medicine.
Right.
And chelation took those events even lower, which is remarkable.
So another way to put it is that chelation is just not just an eccentric alternative to conventional medical management of cardiovascular disease. It's a useful add-on, and in the real world, you're really not going to see, except for maybe some really eccentric individuals say, well, I'm not going to take any statins, I'm not going to take any drugs, I'm just going to go to my holistic doctor and get chelation. Instead, you actually can see that patients who follow a conventional medical path gain a benefit when they take additional chelation.
Right. Yes. Without a doubt. I mean, it's unequivocal. And really the only criticism, aside from people who just, you know, don't believe it, and talking to people like that is like talking to people who believe the earth is flat.
Right.
But they say, well, it was really a small, although statistically significant, it was a small benefit. But the key thing here is that's what's really important is you actually got a statistically significant benefit on top of all of this other very aggressive medical mm-hmm. therapy. Yeah.
And you know, according to Dr. Lamas, when I spoke to him, he said, look, you know, if this were a drug, I would be presenting the paper in Paris and we'd be sipping champagne. Because, a drug has the potential to generate billions of dollars in profits for the pharmaceutical industry. And the robustness of the finding was actually greater than, statistically, you say, well, there's a small statistical benefit, but drugs have been approved on less clinical evidence than chelation showed in this study.
For sure, without a doubt. And in fact, the statins are right up there.
Yeah. Exactly. They show, let's say, you treat 100 patients and two benefit. They're going to say, well, that's great because we're saving two people from heart attacks. That's good. Well, 98 people will take them needlessly, but that's good enough.
Right.
That's good enough. So that's, I think, a resounding vindication for chelation therapy. And I guess you must be happy because you bet on the right horse. I mean, you spent a considerable part of your career, talking about this. And, hey, it could be kind of disappointing if, you kind of went up a blind alley and we're talking about something that, later studies showed was worthless.
Well, I know, the thing is that nobody who's ever been personally involved with chelation or taking care of a patient who's undergone chelation, no one finds the result of the TACT study surprising. And I remember when I first started getting involved with chelation and I was practicing cardiology, I used to get referrals from, this is in Washington State, referrals from doctors who were practicing chelation at the time. And I remember the first time that I did a stress echo on a patient. And he had a very positive stress echo, and of course I'm a cardiologist, so I want to do an angiogram and see what we're dealing with, and if necessary revascularize. And he said, no, I'm gonna see Dr. Cranton there in Yelm, Washington, and undergo a course of chelation. And he did, and I said, but I want you to, if you have more pain or blah blah blah, you need to come back, and I want you to come back in 6 months. So we repeated the stress echo and it's normal. So when you have a number of experiences like that, it didn't come as any surprise to me and a number of other people that have been involved with these patients over the years.
Right. And we've seen virtual miracles happen.
Yeah.
When patients have undertaken 30, 40, 50 chelations, it really does seem to improve circulation. So okay, great. So while our subject was Keen Mind and Bacopa, I'm glad we got to talk to you a little bit about your perspective on chelation, because that's been an important part of your contribution to the field of integrative medicine. We're a little short on time, so perhaps we'll rejoin you to talk more about biofilms, maybe provide us with an update on that subject. We did an excellent podcast perhaps a couple of years ago on the subject of biofilms and natural ways to break up biofilms. But can you just say a few words about biofilms so people know what we're talking about?
Well, biofilm is a process that we're actually all very familiar with because all of that plaque on your teeth and that cotton mouth in your mouth when you wake up every morning, that's all biofilm from the oral microbiota. All microorganisms live in biofilm, and biofilm's neither good nor bad, but when it's being made by pathogens, it makes getting rid of pathogens very, very difficult. When a pathogen that's residing within biofilm is going to be very antibiotic resistant, biofilms are why it's virtually impossible to treat medically infected medical devices, whether it's a prosthetic valve or a hip or whatever. And so disrupting the biofilm is a way of getting to the organisms and killing them off and getting rid of the pathogens making the biofilm. And so these can be infections like the prosthetic infections that I talked about, or these can be things like candida.
Or even Lyme disease,
Lyme disease. Yeah. And we now know that that these organisms make biofilm, and the full extent that biofilm's involved in the disease process we have yet to appreciate. But but they live in biofilm, which has big implications for chronic antibiotic treatment of these individuals.
Which may make some of these infections very tenacious and hard to treat,
right.
As in, you know, chronic sinusitis, chronic prostatitis, many lung infections, respiratory tract problems, and of course Lyme disease, which may reside in the joints and may reside in the tissues or even in the nervous system. So the ProThera actually has certain products which are designed to attack or break down biofilms. And of interest is that your previous experience with chelation, which is based on something called EDTA, EDTA is a chelating agent, that EDTA finds value in the treatment of biofilms. So tell us about that.
Well, that's correct, and that's and that was in fact how I got interested in biofilm was because of my knowledge about EDTA. I was asked by some people at a startup company in Seattle to work on developing tetra sodium EDTA as a catheter lock flush because it has such excellent anti biofilm effects. Because when catheters get colonized or if they get infected, that's because of biofilm. So that if you could put a little lock flush in there instead of heparin that is an anticoagulant that also disrupts biofilm, you will decrease catheter colonization, catheter related sepsis.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got interested. When I came to ProThera, I thought, well, you know, the gastrointestinal organisms must be living in biofilm, and that would include pathogens. I particularly had Candida in mind. And so I set about devising a nutraceutical preparation that utilized readily available as supplements enzymes. We tested it out in the laboratory against a wide variety of biofilms, a variety of gram-negatives, E. coli, Klebsiella, Gardnerella, and gram-positive, staph, strep, Clostridia, and Candida. And we devised a formula that was very, very effective at breaking up pathogenic biofilm. Interestingly, it had no effect on biofilm that was made by Lactobacillus or Bifidobacterium.
Hmm. So it selectively goes after the bad guys and not the good guys.
Right. I mean, we can't say that with 100% certainty because we didn't test it against all the good guys, and mm-hmm. we can't culture all the good guys.
Right.
But to the extent that we could, it had effects only on pathogenic biofilm and not on biofilm made by commensal symbiotic organisms. And so this product Interphase and Interphase Plus, which has the EDTA in it, practitioners have found is a very valuable adjunct to treatment of a variety of different conditions, including, for example, Helicobacter pylori makes the treatments more successful,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Candida and intestinal Klebsiella, these kind of pathogens. And then I actually have a separate set of suggestions for what I call systemic biofilm. I used to call it extra-intestinal biofilm, but people kept calling it extraterrestrial, so I went with systemic.
Right.
So you need something that's going to be well-absorbed, and Serratia peptidase, this enzyme, proteolytic enzyme, turns out to be a very, very powerful anti-biofilm enzyme that is very well-absorbed. It's been well studied, particularly in kids with and young adults with cystic fibrosis, because mm-hmm. this population gets recurrent pneumonia.
The lung infections,
almost always,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, which is almost always due to Pseudomonas, and it's a biofilm infection. And literally combining the Serratia peptidase with appropriate antibiotics has been able to sterilize the lungs of children so they could go on and get a heart lung or a heart transplantation.
So it would, in and of itself, it may be beneficial, but actually it's designed sort of as a penetrating agent. So say you have a tenacious prostatitis or a tenacious sinusitis, a deep-seated infection that's hard for the antibiotic to reach, the use of serrapeptidase could be a way to make the conventional treatment more efficacious.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Because one of the things about organisms, the bacteria And the fungi that are within biofilms specialize, and among the specialized cells are what are called persister cells. So these are cells with very, very low levels of metabolic activity, and that essentially makes them completely resistant to antibiotics, because if you're not, you know, doing anything, you know, metabolizing, you're not going to be able to disrupt mitochondria. Right. Or
they're not quite so, spores, but they're spore-like, right, in that spores have the ability to stay under very harsh conditions, you know, for really long time, with very little metabolic needs for themselves, and then they can reactivate under the right conditions. So good stuff. I mean, you've been involved in some great stuff, and you're a trustworthy source. You were right about chelation. You're right about biofilms. And we think you're on something good with the Bacopa. So a keen mind is a product we're going to keep our eye on, and I'll be using it clinically with patients, encouraging people to try it. And maybe I could boost my IQ by a couple of points. Be a better clinician and broadcaster. I'll give it a shot.
Excellent.
Thanks for joining us today. Thanks. That's Dr. Stephen Olmsted, Chief Science Officer for ProThera, and a cardiologist. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and thank you for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.